This week on the Casual Truth podcast, it was an honor to speak with former U.S. Congressman Kerry Bentivoglio. Kerry considers himself the accidental congressman and served from 2013 to 2015. He represented the 11th District, which is essentially all of Oakland County and some of Wayne County as well. I've thought long and hard about how I was going to have this conversation and how I was going to present it and how it was going to be received by my listeners. You know, we're, of course, in an incredibly polarized time politically, but I do think it's important more than ever to have dialogue with people, especially ones that you might not agree with. In my conversation with Kerry, I really found him to be very pleasant. He was polite. He's a man of faith and someone that was open to being challenged in discussing his views. So that was really cool. I was glad to have him on the show and hope to talk to him again one day. So without further ado, here's Kerry. Kerry Bentivoglio, here we go.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming on.
Well, thanks for inviting me. I certainly appreciate it.
Yeah,
thank you.
You are welcome. So do us a favor, tell everybody who you are, and we can go from there.
Yeah, I was a congressman from the 11th Congressional District. I like to think some people say it was accidental. Some people said it was something else. And then I like to think it was divine intervention, which is a heavy burden, but, you know.
So you're a man of faith.
Yeah, very, very much so. Okay. More so than
all right.
Because you
I
know
have some
when
questions
he,
about
when
that.
When he anoints you, you're in trouble because he's watching.
Oh, wow.
You know, there's no doubt in your mind. You are being watched by something greater than the voters.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, that's a heavy burden, trust
so,
me.
So real quick, why reindeer though?
Yeah, well, it's funny. I'm glad you brought that up because my son, you know, he was at that age, I think it was 8 or 10, somewhere in there, and he didn't believe in Santa or reindeer. He didn't think reindeer. And I said, you know, there's a great business opportunity, you know, you've, as a Republican and capitalist, you know, hey, find a niche. And I also noticed that in my town of Milford, there were a lot of merchants that were closing up their stores and going bankrupt. And when that happens, when a city or a town goes in demise, some other businesses tend to come in, right, that maybe aren't as desirable or family-oriented. So to prevent that happening, I need to make sure that my town, the town of Milford or like Northville, is maintains a strong presence on, for the right reasons, the merchants selling the right products, right? And so I volunteered to or made some calls and found a zoo broker that sold me a bunch of reindeer. And the merchants of downtown Milford bought a sleigh with wheels on it for us. And I promised them that I would teach those reindeer to pull a sleigh. And we did.
So that means you were Santa Claus.
Yeah, it was, yeah, well, I worked for Santa Claus, you know, because he's a busy guy.
Yeah,
so he
absolutely
can't be everywhere at once, as much as we like to think so. But,
okay.
And then non-believers, it was okay because, you know, that was one less stop Santa had to make. So not a big problem. If you didn't believe in Santa, that's okay, you know.
Awesome. So before we get into the meat of what I want to talk to you about, I do feel it's necessary to state a disclaimer, and that is, I have a number of liberal friends that would love to see me bash you for your ideas simply because you're a Republican.
Yeah.
I have conservative friends that would want to see me bolster your positions and celebrate your voting record, but I don't want to do either of those things.
Okay.
So I want to have a conversation with you about ideas. I want it to be a constructive conversation about, you know, maybe the strengths and shortcomings of certain ideas.
Yeah.
And certainly sure. We can talk about political events recently, but
yeah,
if you're okay with that, that's the intention of my conversation with you.
Your liberal friends and try and bash me. You're quite welcome to do that. They, you know, look, quite seriously, I was really concerned about that in the past. Okay. It can be troubling when, especially all they want to do is call you names and, you know, other things. And you have to, you know, that does hurt, right?
Right.
But then I realized that nothing I go through is compared to what my Savior went through. So it's good. The more they bash me, the more I like it. So especially if they don't really have a valid argument to support their statements that are derogatory.
Well, it makes it easier for you, yeah?
Yeah. So I have no problem with, let me explain. We had a bunch of protesters when I was a congressman outside my office. And one of my staffers called me while I was in Washington and said, "Hey, Congressman, they bust in a bunch of protesters from Detroit and they're out here protesting. What do we do?" And I said, "Great. Make sure you get out there and thank them for exercising their First Amendment right. Make sure they have water, coffee, let them use the restroom one at a time. And ask them if they want to make an appointment to see me." And she went out and did that. And later, they had to find, something that wasn't quite right. And they said, "Oh, he called the police on us." No, he didn't. My staff would have been fired had they called the police, unless they were getting violent, and they weren't. But the police were called, but they were called by the business next door to our office because they were blocking their employees' parking lot.
Oh, okay.
So I welcome different opinions and solutions, but I like to hear solutions, not just complaints.
I like that. Yeah. So I want to start right after you won your race. So When were you expected to report to Washington? What was that swearing-in process look like? Was it like Survivor Island immediately, or was there excitement?
How far do you want to go back? Because the Republicans didn't like me either because, I was elected accidentally.
Let's start with you winning the race.
Okay, won the race in November.
And November of what?
Shucks, when was that, 2012? I think I'll have to think about that. 2013 to 2012. November 2012, and it was great. What am I going to do when I get to Washington, right?
Yeah,
it's a little scary.
You're like, what the hell did I get myself into?
Exactly. What the heck? And what was very upsetting is that right a week later, the Republican stood up and told the press, "Oh, he's going to be a one-term congressman." And that hurt quite a bit because I've always voted Republican up to that point. I haven't not voted Republican except once, and that was for myself as an independent, but I still say I was the only Republican on the ballot at the time. And that hurt. I felt betrayed, much like I did when I came home from Vietnam, unwelcomed and unappreciated. They wouldn't even give me an interview or a chance. So at that point, I represented the people of the 11th Congressional District. I didn't really care if they were Democrat, Republican, independent, totally intelligent, or totally insane. I would welcome them. We opened our doors. We put out a trailer that goes to every community for at least a week or so. And we say, "Hey, folks, come on in. You got a concern? If you were having a problem with, number one rule is never lie. Number two was you're there to serve. You're not, just because you're working for the congressman doesn't make you special. So if you have somebody come in, the only thing you can ask them is if they live in the 11th Congressional District. If they live in the Congressional District, you have an obligation to hear what they have to say, even if you disagree with it, right? So that was our priority, and I think it worked because we won two constituent awards for serving both Democrats and Republicans in the 11th Congressional District.
But I want to know what the orientation looked like.
Oh, okay.
Did you get talked to?
Thank you for keeping me on track.
Yeah, no, it's okay.
You went through an orientation for about 2 weeks, and you had all these Republican-leaning groups like Heritage Foundation, Club for Growth, Manufacturers Association, Small Business, so come in and brief you on some of their issues and concerns. Because, no congressman, I don't care who they are, is all-knowing, and you're not acquainted with all the details of every issue. So this is the planting of the seed, so to speak. And that was fun. It was like getting a PhD, going to graduate class, right?
In 2 weeks.
Yeah, in 2 weeks. Let's see. And then you get to meet and rub shoulders with those people that you've seen on TV and the evening news. I remember...
it's got to be pretty exciting.
Yeah, it was. It was kind of a... I'm trying to find the word, but it was... it was like drinking water with a fire hose.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I've heard that.
Yeah. And that's exactly right. And after the swearing-in ceremony, I could talk about some of the things, how Boehner was elected and how that process is, and I can go back to that. But after the swearing-in, I went out on the speaker's balcony, which overlooks the mall, and it was January, so the sun's down at that late of an hour, yeah, about 5:30, 6 o'clock.
Still really cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, and you see the roads on each side with their lights, and you know, and you, the Washington Monument is all lit up, and you see the it reflecting in the mall pond, and I heard in the, behind me, you know, I'm a smoker. I lit a cigarette, and I'm smoking, taking it all in, and going, how in the hell did I get here, right? And then the door opens, and you hear this gruff voice, hi, Kerry, right? This is Speaker of the House, right?
Wow.
And he invited me in his office, and I sat down with him, and, you know, what do you say to the Speaker of the House? You know,
right.
I'm a former school teacher, right, and reindeer farmer. What do you say to the Speaker of the House? So I said, sir, I just want you to know that I'm here to serve and that, number one, I won't lie to you, won't surprise you. I won't tarnish the office I represent, and I won't vote for a multiple issue bill. And I said it just like just now as I said it to him. He goes, you mean an omnibus bill? I said, yes, sir. Is that what they call it? And I won't vote to raise the debt ceiling. And he kind of chuckled and put his cigarette out. He said, okay. And
you put all your cards on the table right away, huh?
Yeah, right away, because I didn't know what else to say, but this is how I felt the citizens of the 11th Congressional District that I know would appreciate, number one, don't lie, don't surprise, and don't tarnish the office you represent. And at the end of my tour in Washington, I use that as a military term, like the end of my tour in Washington, D.C., he came up to me and he said, you kept your promise. And I did. I didn't vote for an omnibus bill, never have. A lot of people say I did. I didn't. And I never voted to raise the debt ceiling, and I didn't tarnish the office. You won't find one scandal, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we make it a point not to lie to our constituents or my colleagues in Washington. If I didn't know the answer, I'd tell you. I don't know, but I'll find out if we can, right? And then what was the other thing? Never lie, never surprise. So we try not to surprise everybody or anybody with what we're going to do, right?
So let's get back to your... Yes, sir. Basic stances. What does Kerry Bentivoglio believe?
Oh, wow. Well, I believe I'm a Christian, and I'm struggling, like every good Christian, struggling to stay in that narrow path. I believe in a family, number one. It's hard sometimes because you don't get to pick your family, right? I believe in a smaller, non-intrusive, fiscally responsible constitutional government. I believe in service to your country. A famous saying was, ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. I think he'd be a Republican today. I always believed that. I mean, I was there. I was in sixth grade when he was killed. And I, you know, saw all the stuff about John Kennedy. I was sold. What we know now and, you know, is different. But back then, it made a big imprint that my job was to serve. And that's one of the things I did. I was, you know, 18 years old in an infantry unit in Vietnam and promoted to sergeant. 18 years old in a unit that was predominantly drafted, okay? And wanted to make the military my career, but because of the drugs and the mistreatment of our Vietnam veterans, I said, I don't want any part of this.
Were you drafted?
No, sir. I volunteered. Yeah, I got my, I went to high school in a military academy. My last 2 years of high school, graduated before my regular class because there was no summer break. And instead of going on to college, I went and served in as a private and got promoted within probably, a year and a half, I was a sergeant.
I heard something interesting. My uncle went to Vietnam, and I was told, I don't know if it's true or not, but if you were somebody that volunteered to be in the hot zones where there was a lot of fighting, you had a shorter period of time before you can go home.
Really?
That's what I was told.
Okay. Well, yeah. I spent 12 months there from August 3rd of 1970 to August 2nd and came back to Oakland, California, August 3rd. So I spent 1 year. 9 months as an infantryman, 3 months counting bullets.
So there was no incentive for signing up as opposed to being drafted? Because, again, from what I've heard, and I don't know if it's right, but if you volunteered as opposed to being drafted, your time of service was actually shorter, so there was an incentive.
No, actually, if you volunteered,
your time was 3 years. The minimum you could volunteer for is 3 years. If you were drafted, it was 2 years.
Mm. Okay. Yeah.
And if you were drafted, they pick what you're going to do. If you volunteer, you can sign up for a special school or whatever. I wanted to be a draftsman. You know, that was my goal. If I had to do something, I enjoyed drafting in high school, so I signed up for that, and they stuck me where they wanted.
Okay.
But
So while we're on the topic of military, let's run down the list. So, what do you think about military? What do you think about borders? What do you think about our role in the world?
Oh, wow!
These are big topics.
But... Yeah, I'm glad you asked that. And I'm glad you didn't give me any pre-warning. Okay. Other than the song, which you still haven't asked me, right?
That's coming. That's coming at the end.
That's good. Okay. Well, the first question was?
Military.
Military.
Should we be the world's police?
No, absolutely not. I'm not. I disagree with that entirely. That's, we have an obligation to protect the borders of this country. Okay. We're sovereign. Now, it doesn't mean we can't engage in humanitarian efforts like we did in during the tsunami, near the Philippines or the, I'm trying to think, I can't remember offhand.
Yeah, Thailand.
But, yeah, Thailand, those places, it doesn't mean we can't assist that. And I think that actually works better than going in and invading the country. I also have a little problem with when you're the police force, you have to make a decision, do we go into Iraq or Afghanistan and ignore these other things that are happening where we have mass executions, African countries or Bosnia or some other place like that. As a member of the world, we have an obligation to assist in possibly some peacekeeping missions. But even that, I'd have to know. I think there's rules of engagement we need to reevaluate.
Sure. And if you're a constitutionalist, Jefferson was the one to say commerce and friendship with everyone, entangling alliances with none.
Right.
And George Washington in his farewell address warned absolutely about the dangers of entangling alliances with foreign powers.
And that's of all the generals and presidents, I think I like George Washington the best because he was asked, or they would have made him king, right? He was asked to be king, and he said, no way. Somebody had asked me about a year ago if I would consider to be president of the world. And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, if you were president of the world, what's the first thing you would do? And I looked at him, resign?
Yeah.
Not interested.
Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, we can't say that about everybody.
Right.
With Washington, it's interesting that you say that because he would have been offered a third term, but he realized that he would have died in office. And so he didn't want to set that precedent that if he had died, it was a lifelong obligation.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I'm glad you told me. I'll have to check that out.
So he wanted to essentially lead by example.
That's the way it works.
And he was deified. He was godlike in many ways.
That's how people looked at him. But you also, at that time, we looked at, I've been watching a program, the series on Netflix called The Crown.
What season are you on?
My wife gets that. I think we're on season two. So that's our evening, after dinner or during dinner, we'll put on that, and that'll be our evening entertainment before bed. But
I liked when I liked season one, excuse me for cutting you off, especially when JFK visited too. He was all hopped up on drugs, remember that? And he couldn't get any of the titles right.
Yeah. It's and I fell in love with the Queen of England in that program.
Really?
Yeah, she's got her act together. It's limited by her circumstances, but she's making an honest effort. At least in my interpretation, she's making an honest effort to get it right, right? Uh-huh. And that you even though there's some weaknesses there, you got to give her credit. I mean, the lady is doing her best, right?
She was savvy, indeed.
Yeah, and she, she's identifying her weaknesses and acting on those weaknesses, which I greatly admire. I always tell people, especially students when I was a teacher, that you're on a lifelong self-improvement program, whether you like it or not. And if you give up improving yourself, then you might as well die because,
It's interesting that you have that love for the Queen, because I don't care. I'm just going to tell you where my position is with my politics. I'm more of a Jeffersonian Democrat, right?
Yeah.
And so I'm committed to, you can call that a libertarian today to a certain extent.
Okay.
Committed to the Republic, opposition to corruption, insistence on virtue, antagonist to things like elitism of merchants, bankers, manufacturers. Strange thing about Jeffersonian Democrats, though, is they had a distrust of factory workers, which I thought was kind of odd. But they had a lot of emphasis on the quote-unquote yeoman farmer, or the plain folk, the planter, right? So I appreciate that. But, you know, in that same philosophy, the reason I bring it up is they had a strong suspicion of people that were supporters from Westminster, those Westminster politics.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what you're talking about. I mean, you're talking about the character of the Queen, but when it comes to the influence on the U.S.,
yeah,
it's interesting.
I spent three tours representing the National Guard to the U.K., and I worked with a great bunch of guys, the 101 Royal Artillery, for 2 weeks. I got to know them as good as the soldiers I knew back here in the States, 3 years in a row. And on the middle weekend, they always ask, where would you like to go? And, of course, the first time I was there, I wanted to go to, you know, London, right? To see all the historic sites.
It's a special place.
Yeah, yeah. And I've been Trafalgar Square, Westminster.
Did you go to Windsor?
Yeah, I went to Windsor and was outside. And they explained to me how the flag, if the flag's there, that means royalty is residing there. And so they explained all that. And I understand what the elitist attitude. But he also explained they like the idea of the Queen because we still have a fascination. And if you will, it's almost like, I hate to say this because use this analogy, but it's a museum, a live working museum, right? This is what the monarchy is all about. This is what we fought against, right? And I'm not one who would want a king, but I have to respect it, and I respect the person. It's like I didn't always vote with John Boehner, right? But we're supposedly smoking buddies. But
why do you have to respect the monarchy, though? That's a complete antithesis of everything this country was founded on.
See, that's a gotcha question, isn't it? No, that's good. I think there is the King of Kings, all right? The humble King of Kings. The real King of Kings. And I think where they're an example of, as much as I appreciate that, it's a lesson that we should all learn, okay? That even the king is a human being and has weaknesses. And what this program is showing us is that the Queen of England isn't perfect, right? And I don't know of anybody that's more perfect than my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, right?
Let's explore that for a minute, because you've mentioned that multiple times now, your faith. So my preliminary question to you is, do you believe that the world is going to end in your lifetime?
No.
And the reason I ask is because there's a division between the idea of pre-millennials and post-millennials. Are you familiar with this?
No.
So the idea of the millennial is the return of Jesus, the second coming of Jesus and the rapture, right?
Okay.
So the rapture is essentially, there are two different things, the rapture and the second coming, right? The post-millennials see it both as the same thing. So the rapture is the idea that people who are believers will ascend into the clouds and be saved by Jesus, go to heaven. The people that are dead and believed in the faith will also be resurrected and raised up, and Jesus will come down and everybody else goes to hell, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the post-millennials use Revelations really as a moral guidepost to make the world a better place. It's kind of in the way that Jesus would have it, kind of a Christian perfectionism. So where I'm going with this is, based on your answer just now, I would kind of put you into that bucket of like post-millennials, right? But my concern when it overlaps with politics is, do you see that special type of American Christianity affect the policies that we have in this country, namely endless wars, climate change denial, runaway banking fraud?
Mm-hmm. I've heard that numerous times, and I've heard that when I went back to school to get my master's to become a teacher back in the 90s, one of the classes that were taught, the professor happened to mention that the kids today had a belief that they would not be able to live out a normal lifetime like their forefathers. And so that's always, I've always been watching that. And, you know, I don't know the answer to that question. I do know that, like, for me, the world's going to end eventually. I'm going to die, right? After that, I hope that I've done everything right to meet my maker on a one-on-one basis, you know.
Do you find that your faith directs your politics?
Yes, it does, 100%. It's
even though the founders emphasized a secular type government where those two are separate.
Where is that?
It was one of the founding fathers that stated they wanted to keep religion and politics separate because the statement was that Europe's soil has had so much blood in it that they want to keep that far from our shores, essentially. So I'm not saying you can't be a man of faith, but when it comes to directing your politics, that can be a little tricky. And you look at somebody like George Bush in the early 2000s, who was a known evangelist, and so it becomes kind of muddled.
From the very beginning, became kind of muddled.
Because, that's true.
You know,
I give you that for sure.
It's well, I think. There was some wisdom in understanding that religion can be corrupted just like politics, okay, because it is. We've seen it in the Catholic Church. We've seen it in almost all churches, right? They have. I have a little problem with the hypocrisy of some of the things in church. Now, somebody can read into that anything they want, but they should be asking more specific questions, like, what do you mean? Give me an example. You know, look back in the Salem witch trials, right? These are witches, so we're going to hang them, right? Really? Come on. Now, you know, there's real no real proof there, right? Or in their minds, they believed they were right. So there's a problem I have with a bunch of white Baptists wearing a mask, riding horses, and burning a cross in front of a former slave's house and or burning down a Baptist church that happens to be full of their parishioners happen to be all black. You know, I have a real problem with hypocrisy. And I think that's the key, is one of the promises I'd like to make, but I find difficult because I too can fall into the trap is, I'd like to have said, you know, there's two things I don't want to do. One is I don't want to lie intentionally, right? Don't, unless you ask me what size fish I caught the last time I went fishing, I may stretch the truth, right? But I also don't want to be a hypocrite. And yet I find myself being that hypocrite, which is what Jesus doesn't like either, right? So I think what they're really talking about when you get down to it, is they don't want to entangle the hypocrisy or the holier-than-thou attitude a king or queen might have or any government. This is not, they don't want to make it a theocracy. And I think that's where we have a tendency to, if we did that, we would be hypocrites. And I think that's the key, is try not to be a hypocrite. And by because I know that everything that man touches is corrupted. So I like to go to the source. So like in Washington, okay, I have a question and I ask and I get different responses to my question. But the main man would be the Speaker of the House. Mr. Speaker, you know, my bill just passed the committee. What's the next step? And he said, well, the next step is you have to lobby the people who will allow it to come to the floor for a vote. I said, great, Mr. Speaker, that's really good advice. Who do I lobby? He looks at me and he says, me. And I said, consider yourself lobbied. What's the bill? And I told him the bill. And, you know, he told me what was the problem was, but it eventually did come to the floor for a vote and was voted on with 100% bipartisan support. So Democrats and Republicans liked my bill because it protected everybody.
The vibe I get from you when you explain your time in Congress is that you were an honest, kind of goody-two-shoes type. Would you agree with that?
No.
Really?
Yeah, it wasn't.
Well, you weren't a liar?
No, I wasn't a liar. And was I a goody-two-shoes? I don't...
Maybe that's not the right okay. way of saying it, but maybe transparent.
Yes. I was rated the second most transparent member of Congress. Why? Okay. It's because my life was an open book in Congress. You have a right to that. You have a right for me to be transparent and accountable mm-hmm. to my voters. And I did all that. In fact, we posted our votes online. We explained to people why I voted that way.
Maybe, I mean, I think that's a good thing, being transparent to the people that you serve. But, you know, there's this game that plays out within Congress.
Yeah, it's terrible.
But it's politics. That's the nature of the beast.
I don't like that kind of politics. You know, I represent, here's the way it works, okay, in my opinion. And now let me put it this way. I have a version of politics that are different than the version of politics you see on every day. Number one, you have an obligation to your constituents. That's who you work for. And I would not, I would work hard to make sure that when you talk to me, you felt like you could go have a beer and we could sit down and tell jokes.
I grab a beer with you after this.
No, thank you.
Because I know we could talk a lot longer
but I'm not really
than our
a beer
time
drinker,
constraints.
But,
all right, well, coffee.
I have political opponents that are waiting for me to have a few too many. So
how do you smoke but not drink?
Yeah, well, I picked that up when I was a military guy. It was government sponsored, you know, back in the day.
No.
Yeah, the government gave you cigarettes to smoke.
I have a question about health since we bring that up. Yeah. I want to take a twist in this conversation.
Good.
We're in this interesting time of COVID and masks and vaccines, and I want to know your opinion on the idea of medical freedom, my body, my choice, when it comes to mandatory vaccines.
I don't agree with mandatory vaccines. There's no way in hell I'm going to want to push something like that. There's no way. Because I know, you know, I have a grandson who's allergic to certain things, right? And I don't know or understand what's in those vaccines. Now, there's a difference between, like, the smallpox vaccine came from cowpox. You know, people who got cowpox, if you took the cowpox ingredients, whatever it is, and you give it to a person, it prevents smallpox because people who got cowpox didn't get smallpox.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's his story. But what we've done is we've taken that basic, and I'm not a scientist, I'm not a doctor, but I do know from what I've learned so far that the vaccines today are suspect. I do know that in the classroom as a teacher, I taught special ed for about 3 years. I always had two classes a year. The rest of my classes were, you know, general ed, but I had special ed classes. I specialized for the emotionally impaired. And I've very acquainted with people who, for some reason, they have some issues. And we know that from my own experience in Iraq, after a vaccination is administered, certain people behave a certain way. And I'm not an expert psychologist, psychiatrist, or doctor, but with my own eyes,
anecdotally, you've seen it.
Yeah, I've seen with my own eyes soldiers' mood and disposition totally change after vaccination. Now, out of 150, you know, maybe 8 or 9, right? Nothing to be worried about. Really? What about those 8 or 9 people? You know, those are my soldiers, right? I have to watch out for them at my rank.
Define that a little more. Irritable?
Yeah, irritable.
Reckless.
They get flush, rash, argumentative. Their mood changes totally, where before they're normally good-natured, you know, get along, do their job. And I had a soldier come up to me, and he said he was a great soldier. He's out of the Chicago area, and he said, Sergeant Bentivoglio, I'm not getting a vaccine. And I'm responsible to ensure my job was to make sure that each of our soldiers got a there's a series of six vaccinations for anthrax, okay, in 07. And so I got to watch what I say here, but
yeah, this is a dangerous topic because people are going to label you as an anti-vaxxer, conspiracy theorist, QAnon.
Now wait a minute. I'm glad you brought that up because remember what I said at the beginning of this conversation: cowpox vaccination to treat for smallpox works. I would take that in a minute, okay, to prevent smallpox because it wasn't. How can I say it? It wasn't, they didn't put a lot of other things in it. It was very simple. Here's the germs from cowpox that won't kill you, but it prevents you from getting smallpox. That's good stuff. All right. So what we've done is we've done some things to it to, according to the scientists, to it that will make it last longer and da 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 da. If you look at the actual ingredients in some of these vaccines, you might want to reconsider. So you still might want to take it. I don't care. It's up to you. But what I do know is that I've seen from my own eyes soldiers change in their disposition, their emotional, status.
And these are grown men. So now think about
Children
developing brains, babies, right?
Exactly.
Should they include that in the routine or the schedule of vaccines? Because I know there's a lot of people that are afraid out there and people that I know that are concerned about getting injections. And furthermore, I think there's a deeper philosophical argument that could be made against the state mandating what happens to your body.
That's totally ridiculous. We're going to go to war with that because you can't. I don't think first of all, people need to get educated. That's number one. You need to, study, what are you going to put into your body? Had I known back in when I started smoking that, it was bad for you, probably would have never started smoking, or maybe I would have anyway. Who knows? But I do know back when I started smoking, nobody ever said anything about smoking's going to cause cancer, so on and so forth. And then, it's more addictive than heroin, they say.
Yes.
So, okay.
Yes.
So I don't drink really, and, I don't do it. My only negative thing, and I have people out there, you smoke, therefore I can't vote for you.
But you should have autonomy over your own body.
Yeah.
As long as it's not harming somebody else. And that's where the tricky part is.
Right. Don't smoke in the room. I can respect your... if I put somebody in my car that doesn't smoke, I ask them, do you mind if I smoke? Do you have a problem with it? Was your car? I said, yeah, but I want to know if you have a concern. Yeah. Okay. I won't smoke. Or can you roll down the window? Yeah, I can. Thank you for cooperating with me. But do you have people, that hate smokers? We're like the great evil or something. Well, okay. But I still get things done. Right. But getting back to your question about vaccines, it's important that people understand what they're putting in their body. And if it was me, knowing what's going on, because this soldier would not get the vaccine for his series of six anthrax vaccinations, right? He was a good soldier. He could be court-martialed for not getting that vaccine. So somehow or other, his records turned up that he got all the vaccines, and he thinks, I'm the greatest sergeant in the world, right? I don't know how that happened, but all of a sudden, his shot record showed that he got all his vaccinations. And I don't know if he came to his senses or he figured something else out, but he was very grateful for that. And I'm kind of, that opened my eyes. I said, here's a guy who's willing to put his entire military career on the line. How did he get here? Did he turn? Because before you even go to Iraq, you got to go through, get a bunch of vaccines. I didn't ask him, but I suspect somehow or other, he got around that too, because he would not get a vaccination.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
So do you think we're headed towards a more draconian 1984 George Orwell type scenario where you can't travel or you can't, engage in commerce and business if you don't have some sort of vaccine that's tied to, say, like a barcode on your phone?
We're already there. Try to get on a United Airlines flight without a vaccination, shot record.
They didn't say vaccination. They said negative test.
Okay.
But I eventually think it's going that way.
Well, now they're saying vaccination is what I heard. But, you know, I could be wrong. I wasn't there. But that's what I've been hearing.
God, that's a scary answer. Mm-hmm. We're already there.
Yeah, we're already there. Well, we are in a lot of ways. A lot of your listeners and my future opponents are going to make this an issue. But
that's what's kind of scary about this conversation is we're just having fun. We're talking.
Yeah, but
they'll
use
people can use this conversation in the future. Say, Kerry said this.
Right. And they'll take it out of context. Okay.
Yeah.
First of all, I'm about vaccine choice. Let's make that perfectly clear. Anything contrary to that statement is ridiculous. As a congressman or a person, I'm not going to force you to do anything you don't feel comfortable doing. I wouldn't ask you to do something I wouldn't do, right? I told that to my soldiers when I was a National Guardsman. I told my students the same thing. I wouldn't do anything. I wouldn't ask you to do something I wouldn't do. You know, I have a moral code. A very strong moral code, contrary to what some people say, but they like to lie, and that's the problem. It seems like today the world's pretty upside down. What was once good is now bad, and what was once bad is now good. You know, the Bible says that there's a man and woman, but if you're a Democrat, there's 26 other genders, right? The world's pretty confusing. So what I have to do is my job, and I'm not perfect, is to try to be the example, okay? So I will say this. I was a soldier. I got a lot of vaccinations, and it might have affected me mentally because I ran for office not soon thereafter, and anybody who runs for office probably needs their head examined, right? What you decide to do if you're going to get vaccinated is you need to do the research. The problem I have is looking at history to advise people. I don't know the name of the drug, but back in the 50s and 60s, there were women who would get miscarriages, and they were given a drug to prevent the miscarriage. But in some of those women, their child, if it was a female, was born unable to reproduce. That's a long-term effect we didn't know. The same with smoking. Back in when I was in Vietnam, we'd get sea rations like World War II, and there were packages of cigarettes in there. The government wanted you. In fact, the drill sergeant in basic training would say, smoke them if you got them, and if you don't have them, see your buddy who does. Cigarette smoking was promoted by the government.
So real quick, if I could interject, if you had the opportunity to travel back in time and talk to young Kerry Bentivoglio, would you say, don't do it?
Right.
You're going to be hooked the rest of your life?
Yeah, I would. It can't happen, but I'm sure we all look back and say, gee, if I knew what I knew now, I wouldn't have done that, right? I would have bought stock in a fruit company called Apple, you know, something along those lines. And we all have those. So the key is you have to understand, try to ask three questions every single day before you go to bed. I pray. I go out on my back porch and I have my last cigarette for the evening. And I said, I ask myself what we call the Army after action review. What went right? What went wrong? And how can I do better tomorrow?
Every day.
Every single day. Try to. But it's important to try to be the example. All right. To give me an example. The biggest compliment I got was from my son. You know, he's a typical teenage son. He's a dad. All my friends wish they had a dad just like you. And I go, and we had just had an argument, you know, father, son. He was upset because he wanted a four-wheeler because all his friends had four-wheelers. And I told him, I said, son, I understand your position. We have reindeer in our backyard. When all your friends get reindeer in their backyard, I'll get you a four-wheeler.
That's hilarious.
So he was lucky because, in school he was told, teacher was talking about white-tailed deer, and he says, oh, we have reindeer in our backyard, and the teacher scolded him and said, no, those are white-tailed deer. And, you know, all his friends that didn't know at schoolmates, they said, oh, what are you, stupid? Those are white-tailed deer. And his other buddy stands up and says, no, his dad raises reindeer. He really has reindeer. They didn't believe there was such a thing as reindeer. Teacher did, but
So we had to take the reindeer to school to show his friends. That,
you're an interesting cat.
Yeah, we actually had reindeer in our backyard.
So I want to pivot a little bit because I do have.
I just did.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Well, we're going to pivot again because I do have a bone to pick with you.
Okay.
You talked about military a few times. And so I noticed looking at your voting record that you had voted for the National Defense Authorization Act, the NDAA of 2014. For those that don't know, the NDAA is it's a series of federal laws. It determines an annual budget for defense. The reason I wanted to bring it up is because the 2014 Act included language of indefinite detention without trial, and it increased the surveillance state via established database. It was signed by Obama, but you also voted for it.
Yep.
So as of 2018, there's 40 detainees still in Gitmo being held indefinitely. And so there's a figure of speech in the American language that says sold down the river. Yeah. Now, sold down the river
from the
means
slavery
to
days, I think.
Correct. So it means to betray so to benefit yourself. So it does come from American slavery. The river refers to the Mississippi River, and down implies, you know, the transfer of slaves from north to south. So my question to you quite directly, did you sell us down the river by signing this to hopefully get reelected?
I didn't do it to get reelected.
It was in 2014, though, right at the end of your last year.
Yeah, wouldn't it? No, and there was a reason looking back on that, because I did vote for it. I have no, and I'm not going to, I don't want to use this as a cop-out, because that's very big on my agenda. You have no right to arrest people without due process, right? It's very big.
Fifth Amendment.
Right, exactly. And a lot of other reasons, too. I don't want people coming to the middle of the night and arresting somebody because they disagree with your ideology, like the IRS, you know. What I did see, my plan, because that was, in fact, on my agenda to eliminate that. I remember getting advised that it wasn't in there, because that was very big on my agenda. I've talked to people about it, and then I voted for it. What I did vote for, and let's look at now, at the time, I was told it wasn't in there. Okay, I'm a busy guy. I don't have time to read that whole bill to verify that. I have to trust my staff. That's still a cop-out, but that's how it was projected me. The other thing they focused on was the Taiwan Travel Act. That was very important to me.
I'm not familiar with that.
Yes. Well, that's it passed. It actually became an amendment in the National Defense Authorization Act. And what it did was, when I first took office in March, I actually went to Taiwan. I met the president of Taiwan, their Speaker of the House equivalent.
It's a nice place.
Yeah, it was nice. The people are awesome, right? I understand their history and so on and so forth. But, you know, the bigger picture was, it was a shot over the bow of China. China, when I did that and issued put the bill out there, the Taiwan Travel Act, all of a sudden China was like, what's going on? You can't do that. Taiwan's our enemy. Right?
Because you went there?
Because I went there and submitted a bill called the Taiwan Travel Act, which was incorporated into the National Defense Authorization Act, right? So
you had skin in the game.
Yeah, I had skin in the game. The bigger threat to me at that moment in time is now being identified clearly to the American public. You could not get masks in this country when everybody was upset and afraid of this COVID-19 when it first happened in March and April. You couldn't get masks.
That's a fact.
Right.
I know that.
So where did they come from? China. Where's our manufacturing? China. Where's our food process? China.
Pharmaceuticals.
Pharmaceuticals, yes. 85% of pharmaceuticals are made in China.
China.
This is the big evil. Okay, I can, if I make inroads, and this is what we say, you know, you want to change the Republican Party, get involved and change it. And then we find out the closer you get to changing it, then they change the rules, right? We know that. All right. Well, here's the problem is, if at the time, the logic was, I got to get into the position or receive the respect enough to be able to have the ear of the Speaker of the House and the party, Republican Party, as a whole, as, hey, guys, I understand. So the next thing on the agenda would have been for me to go after that clause that you and I both object to in the National Defense Authorization Act. Now, I've been, I'm not going to hide behind, you know, oh, I didn't do that. I'm not sidestepping. I voted for it. I did not at the time believe in my heart of hearts that that was in there. But what the wording is such is they funded it. So if I'd still been there, that would have been a major issue. I would have went after it. But more, the greater evil at the time for me was the Chinese thing, because immediately after the National Defense Authorization Act was submitted, I had the chief diplomat from China in my office telling me what they're going to do to me if I continue to pursue this. And I saw the great evil.
In a suit with a smile.
Huh?
Sorry, please continue.
Yeah, the chief diplomat for China,
right,
in my office, telling me that he's going to do everything that he can to make sure that I don't get reelected. So now I got not only China and their powerhouse, but also, you know, my Republican opponents who don't think a regular guy should be elected to Congress. So, yes, it's for all those people that think I sold out, I understand your position. I apologize. It won't happen again.
Have you gotten that criticism before?
Yeah, about four or five people have mentioned it, and I told them, and they know me, so they accepted my response. So,
my biggest fear, and I think we're seeing it now with the new administration coming in, you know, talking about essentially categorizing Trump supporters as being domestic terrorists. And so you get into this idea of habeas corpus, right? Mm-hmm. So a writ of habeas corpus. So for people don't know, the writ is well, let's start off by saying habeas corpus is Latin for show me the body, right? Show me the body of evidence, right?
Right.
A writ requiring a person under arrest is to be brought before a judge so they don't serve that indefinite detention, right?
Right.
And so what's scary is that there is a precedence for this. So in 1861, Abraham Lincoln suspended a writ of habeas corpus for protesters and dissenters.
Mm-hmm.
That's tyrannical. That's scary. And now we can go down that slippery slope even today.
Yes, we can, because of the National Defense Authorization Act, which gives them the right to come in and arrest you without a warrant or simply suspect.
And our First Amendment's already under attack.
Well, everything's under attack.
Yeah.
It says, Kerry, do you support the Constitution? Well, let me give you an example. January 5th, I went to Washington to lobby for myself. I'm an unpaid lobbyist. I just took it upon myself to go down to talk to members of Congress because I have a pen. I can walk on the floor of Congress anytime they're in session. I can't vote or lobby. But I don't have to go through the X-ray machine, all the protocols you need to get into a congressional office building. So I went in there and I visited as many former colleagues as I could, telling them what's going on in Michigan with the high rate of suicides, bankruptcies, domestic violence, the drug and alcohol abuse that's increased, and so on and so forth. And we need to get Michigan working again. And by the way, I'd really appreciate you to support President Trump. Okay. And several of the arguments were, well, I have to vote according to the Constitution. And I looked at him smiling like I'm smiling at you now. And I said, you know, if you don't support President Trump because of your constitutional principles, when Biden gets elected, you won't have constitutional principles anymore because there won't be a constitution. They will completely ignore that. That's what you're fighting. So if you have a problem with your constitutional principles because you don't believe the overwhelming evidence, then I can't help you. There's nothing I can do. So, I will tell you this. The problem we have today, which you said is going to happen, is actually happening. And that's been, I've warned people about this for 4 years, that what's coming, what you see today was coming. And I can prove that because it's in the congressional record.
That's a terrifying thought, because the preamble of the Constitution, or the Declaration of Independence is, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. How the hell do you try to get rid of that?
What do you mean? How do you fix it?
No. How do you abolish that if what you're saying, if the premise of what you're saying is true? That's awful.
Okay.
You're talking about incoming administration. It is more of a rhetorical question.
No, that's
I'll
a
allow
good
you
question.
To...
I'm going to tell you a story, and your listeners need to hear this.
Okay.
It was explained to me recently by a very good and intelligent friend of mine. Okay. And one of my favorite sayings is, in order for evil to triumph, good men do nothing. Okay. Now, bear with me here for a second. I know we're running out of time. Edmund Burke, right. It was one of my favorite sayings, but I'm wrong. Those who do nothing are not good. They are this, okay? Let's picture in your mind the African savanna. And you've got these water buffalo grazing in the savanna, eating grass. They're about 2,000 pounds of solid muscle with these great big horns. And off on the periphery, one of their brethren is attacked by a herd of lions and is being eaten alive. The water buffalo move away, maybe 100 yards or so. They continue to graze and watch a fellow water buffalo get eaten alive. Are those good water buffalo or evil? Because if the water buffalo knew, because they have 2,000 pounds of solid muscle and these great big horns, if they wised up and turned on those lions and trampled them and gorged them with their horns, those lions and tigers that attack them won't be preying on them. So the difference is we have the human being. Look what's happening and do nothing about it. I don't think they're good.
I understand your analogy, mm-hmm. but we're not water buffalo. We're much more advanced thinking beings. Now, yeah. I understand we have animal instincts, mm-hmm. right?
One
but
part
what, do
of
you,
brain
what do you define as action, though? Is it protest? Is it voting? Is it electing Congress? Is it writing your congressman? What is it?
Well, it used to be that, because if enough people came, you could make an appointment, you could come to talk to me, because even though we did have some things maybe we weren't quite right about, okay, and some mistakes we actually made. One thing is you could always call my office and ask to see the congressman, and you would get an appointment.
Are you going to run again?
I don't know. the big complaint was, he doesn't have any money. Well, look at what's happened. Everybody who keeps getting elected keeps coming back from Congress richer. I came home and had to file bankruptcy, and yet I haven't had a credit card in 23 years, and I own my own house.
Did you sell the reindeer?
Yeah, we had to sell the reindeer. Everything we did had to be wiped out. And they said, I was sued 4 times, of which 3 of them were frivolous. One had a basis in truth, but their demands were so unreasonable that if we agreed to them, we would be put in bankruptcy. And finally, I just threw up my hands and said, good, we'll settle with them. And at the settlement, I told them, I said, if you're going to force me into this, you're going to put me in bankruptcy. And they looked at me and they said, well, that's the idea. Huh. They wanted to make it so I could never run again, because I represented every bill I sponsored came from an idea or suggestion from my constituents, not a lobbyist. Prove me wrong.
If you run again, will you come back on the show?
I'll come here anytime you want me. I've enjoyed this.
Let's ramp down. We'll have another conversation again. I feel confident about that.
Yeah, you're fun. You like this conversation?
Yeah, I do. I think this is good. I'll come up with some more.
See,
no, not
get
at
a
all.
Camera.
No,
Stevie's squirming.
Well, I'll come up with some more zingers next time. But let's gear down and let's have some fun questions. And you know, I had asked you earlier to prep for this, but I wanted to ask you one. Typically, I ask my guests what Detroit means to them, and you can choose to answer that. But I'm going to expand a little more outwards. You can choose to answer that, or what does the greater whole of Michigan mean to you, or what does the United States as a former U.S. congressman symbolize to you?
Okay. Wow, great. Well, you know, I've visited in my military career and private life, I've visited 28 different countries in the world. Some of those places you don't want to go to. I've been to Guatemala, El Salvador, Honduras as a congressman. I've been to Taiwan as a congressman, Vietnam, and some other places as a soldier. England, New Zealand, you know, I haven't been to Australia yet, but there's been a lot of countries in the world. And, you know, people in America don't really understand or appreciate what we have. You can turn on electricity and you actually get electricity. You can turn on a faucet and you get clean water. You know, you can go to bed in a warm, cozy bed now, right, in the dead of winter like we were at. There's places in the world where that doesn't happen. I love Michigan because I love to fish. My father taught me how to fish.
Cool.
You know, I'm a fisherman. I can go.
You fly fish?
I fly fish. Whatever kind of fish I can fish,
cool.
I'll fish.
Cool.
I don't go ocean fishing because it makes me seasick.
Yeah, I don't like the ocean.
I end up chumming the water. I don't want to do that. Okay. So I fish on inland lakes and rivers. I like to fly fish. I have fly fishing equipment, waders, you name it. I got it when it comes to fly fishing.
Do you love that movie, A River Runs Through It?
Yeah, that's
I love that movie.
Yeah, pretty good movie.
Robert Redford did good in that.
Right, and I like to, my wife and I like to fish, and my biggest joy is, I could show you pictures, my grandson, he's like 4 years old, and his grandfather took him fishing, and he's holding up a 16-inch bass that he caught, you know, on his little fishing rod. Nothing gives me greater joy. I love Michigan. I grew up here. I always come home here. I can't wait to get home when I'm overseas doing something. Michigan is my place.
Mine too. I'm going to die here.
Yeah, me too. And, you know, I've been to almost every, pretty much every state in the United States up for Hawaii. You know, I've been to Alaska, and I've been to, you know, pretty much every state in the country except for I haven't been to Hawaii. I don't really want to go because I like. But, of course, what's her name?
I heard Kauai is an awesome island.
Yeah, okay.
I heard Zuckerberg owns Kauai. Oh. I heard Obama has a residence there.
Okay, especially if you want to go there. Okay. What's her name? Gabby Tolst, the Democrat from Hawaii, the congresswoman. She's a pretty awesome lady.
Damn it, why can't I
remember?
Yeah,
I can't think of her name either. See her face. I served her. We were elected at the same time. She was a Democrat, and I often asked her. I said, why'd you run as a Democrat? You know,
I'm looking this up. This bothers me.
So Michigan is my home. A lot of people are saying, I hate the governor, so I'm moving out of Michigan. And my answer to them are, why? You know, why don't you stay here and fight for it? And so, when I was in Vietnam, we were fighting communism. And somebody says, well, when the communists come on our doorstep, I'll fight. I'm waiting for you to show up because they're at your doorstep right now, folks. You know, you're a libertarian, great, I understand it, but I didn't, I considered being a libertarian, but then I met the guy who ran for president as a libertarian. He wants open borders. I'm sorry, I'm not interested.
Tulsi Gabbard.
Yes, Tulsi Gabbard, yep. Wonderful lady. I liked her.
It's cool you met her.
Huh?
It's cool you met her.
Yeah, she was Army. I think she was a warrant officer or something, I forget. But we got along fine. And, she's a very honest person. She's a Democrat, but she's very honest. Mm-hmm. She reminds me of a John F. Kennedy Democrat.
Interesting.
Yeah, she would be the modern day John F. Kennedy Democrat, in my opinion, but, you know. So in answer to the other question is why I'm staying in Michigan?
No, I didn't ask that, but you can tell me.
Okay, well, the other thing is I have a pet peeve, okay? And if we have the opportunity, it should take about 2 minutes.
Sure.
All right.
Michigan represents, or the Great Lakes, I should say, more specifically, represents about a little more than 20% of the world's fresh water. And we have to be very, very careful about that because I'm a Republican, but I like clean water and clean air, right? Even though I'm a smoker, you know, I probably appreciate clean air more than most.
That's quite peculiar that you preface that with saying I'm a Republican, but I like clean air and not like clean water.
Well, the Republicans...
kind of says a little bit. Huh?
Well, give me...
Let's not get into it, but okay. It's just observation.
Yeah, good observation, because a lot of people have the mistaken belief that Republicans don't like clean water and clean air.
That's why I said it.
Yeah, I do. I really do. And so most of my Republican friends do too. So what we have, though, is in Michigan, we have an opportunity to be the world power, if you will, economically. More so than the arsenal of democracy in World War II or the automotive capital of the world. Okay. And from my research, and if we're environmentalists and we are concerned about the depletion of the fisheries in the oceans, which we are, and it is depleting at a faster rate. Cod is no longer as plentiful as it used to be. Whales, of course, we know that, so on and so forth. But it's being depleted. What does Michigan have that no other country or state has in the entire world? We're surrounded by the Great Lakes. We don't have a problem fighting over water like they do in California and Arizona and Utah and New Mexico and Texas. We don't have to worry about this aquifer underneath, you know, underneath those western states.
Yeah, we do. Are you kidding me?
We don't.
Yeah, we do.
We have to.
Hershey's came in and they're pumping that water out so
fast.
Yeah,
well, it's not being depleted. It's going to have very little effect. Okay. What has more of an effect is the canal they put in Chicago. And now, you know, the water is being drained, you know, at a certain point. They created a man-made canal to drain water from the Great Lakes. Okay, so let's talk about that. There's nothing, all the companies that are pumping water out of the ground, the groundwater in Michigan is constantly being replaced. As quick as you take it out, it goes right back. For now. We don't know what geological changes are in store for us in the next millennium. But what we can do right now is we have an opportunity to create a new industry that's probably greater than the automotive industry, and that is there's a demand for seafood, or, if you will, fish. So if Michigan had the cojones, and they just thought about it, we could open up vast fish farms. And on a massive scale, we would not only create, if you will, a surplus that we could feed the world with these
massive
fish.
Economy.
Massive economy. We would do so much. But the problem is that people don't really understand that. But we have, for instance, in I think it's Highland Park, the Ford Motor Company water treatment plant is shut down. Why? You know, it's in, is it Highland Park? Yeah, Highland Park. It's in Highland Park. Why is it shut down? Why are we forced by the politician? If you're me, I'm on a well. But when you in Detroit, you or in the metropolitan area, you have to buy Detroit water. How come we don't have any competition? How come we're not putting a closed system of fish farms, okay, to not only feed the world, but also to protect what's going on in the Great Lakes today from some invasive species? Why can't I sell a trout to ship a frozen trout to Shanghai, China, or Hong Kong? And why can't I or have the Queen of England having a Michigan walleye on their plate or a perch dinner? Why not? We could do that if we knew this. But right now, if you were a private citizen and you wanted to invest millions of dollars and put in a fish farm for marketing purposes, you have to go through three agencies, state and the federal, and all kinds of hurdles. So if I bought 640 acres and I put in fish farms, you know, trench ponds or something like that, I can produce 3 million, I think it's more than that, but I'm going to say 3 million perch on 1 acre. Imagine that. And right now, perch in the round sell for, excuse me, not right now. When I checked a while back, it was $9 a pound in the round, which is equivalent of about 4 or 6 perch per, which is a plate, a perch dinner. Right.
I didn't realize that. Yeah. So bringing things full circle to my question. Yeah, okay. I'm glad you went into that. No, I think that's fascinating. I'm definitely going to have to marinate on that. Yeah. I never realized that there's that potential, but to you it symbolizes with the natural resources we have, with the clean water that we have, that we could be much bigger than we actually
are. And we also have the technology. This is what's really fascinating, is we have the technology to take water out of the Great Lakes and put it back immediately cleaner than we got it, which is we're really awesome with the technology. And I think that's so exciting. I said, hey, you know, and I can, between the fish farms, you know, or the ponds, you can have park settings. You can have, you know, sheep or something else, you know, almost like a park setting, but do it in a, we have the technology, do it in such a way that you can, you know, go bicycling, walking, like Kensington Park, if you will, but a little more, a few more ponds, and you know, and while you're also educating people on environmental issues, because why the fish, you're going to just increase the sciences, you know, for kids to, hey, I want to become like Indiana Jones in the temple, you know, be a archaeologist. Well, here you have an opportunity for people to, or students to say, I want to learn.
Be more like Jacques Cousteau, right?
Yeah, or just, you know, how does the environment affect the fish?
It's a bright future. It's bright and it's hopeful, and I like that.
Yeah.
So let's talk about music. I always end this by asking about music, and I believe it's a universal language that does connect us all, no matter what your socioeconomic, you know, status or background is. I think obviously dialogue and what you and I are doing is incredibly important, and I hope we've been able to demonstrate that two strangers can have a civil conversation about politics.
Absolutely.
But when it comes to music, we all have our favorites.
Okay.
Whether songs or artists, what are some of yours?
Well, my favorite artist, I think, would be John Williams. You know, I'm a big fan of Indiana Jones. I like the theme song. I like Indiana Jones. I just said that earlier.
We could have a separate podcast about movies and Indiana Jones. Yeah, I love that trilogy.
Well, he was going after the secrets and the truth.
Right. But let's stick on music.
Yeah.
Let's
stay to music. Williams, you know, da-da-da-da-da. Okay. Da-da-da, you know, that I could listen to that. I also have Sirius Radio in my truck. Mm-hmm. So I have an option on my Sirius Radio. I have the 50s, music 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s. I don't listen to 90s for some reason. It's not as appealing as...
You're not into grunge music?
Yeah. Not, and I also have, what is it, bluegrass?
Okay.
And I also have, it's another one, watercolors? Which is a little more jazz type thing. And so it's a variety, but when it really comes down to it, I'm a big fan of John Williams.
I think that he's not John Williams. I didn't realize you were talking about the composer.
Yeah.
And he's done a lot now.
Yeah.
A lot.
Yeah.
He's done
composer.
Star Wars. He's.
Yeah, know. I could listen to that. And he's very gifted and talented.
Yeah.
I don't know his politics, but he's still, you know,
doesn't
gifted
matter.
And talented. No, it doesn't. And like, we should stay in the music because that's what he's good at. Like, you know, my favorite actor is Tom Hanks, but I heard he's more of a Democrat, you know. And, well, you know, thank goodness he's focusing on being a good actor because he's excellent at it. I love the guy. But he should stay out of politics. Most of Hollywood should stay out of politics. Stick to their acting. You know, that's what they do.
Stay out of politics, Tom.
Yeah, just, you know, we don't, well, private setting, you vote the way you want. I don't really care. But, you know, don't force your, you know, you just destroyed my image of Tom Hanks by, you know, how can a guy that intelligent think those terms? But, you know, it's politics. To each their own, right? But that's me, my value judgment.
Let's end it there.
I don't talk acting. If I tried it once, I was terrible at it.
Well, Cary, it's been a pleasure.
My pleasure. I really enjoyed this. This
I
was
did too.
Fun.
Yeah, it was good.
This is fun. Why don't you need to get more people here to do this?
No, I just wanted to talk to you.
Oh, okay.
Well, believe me, I'm getting other people, but today I'm talking to you.
Well, I appreciate that.
Yeah,
thank
you're
you.
Welcome. And let's do it again.
Please, I look forward to your call.
All right.
God bless.